If you are new with us, as Zach said, this is our last installment of our series, Love and Marriage. In case you missed any of these series, you can always go online at centervillegrace.org/sermons, and you can catch up there. And if you're listening online right now, we want to welcome you. But we're going to wrap up our series this morning the way we started our series, asking the question, how do you stay together and enjoy it? And the reason I wanted to ask this question and tackle this issue this way is because so many times I've talked to married couples and they're committed to the marriage, they're committed to this idea of staying together, but they're not always so committed with doing what it takes to make the marriage what God really intended marriage to be. And so I really wanted to kind of focus in on that because I think that's really kind of a sad state of affairs when you understand that God really intended our marriages to be really our best friendships that we have. And so that's really kind of why I wanted to tackle our topic the way I did. And I think all of us would say that when we started our marriages, we really started as friends. I mean, the reason that you probably got together in the first place, the reason that you wanted to stay together is because you were good friends or best friends with your person. And so there was probably a level of physical attractiveness there, but there's also this desire that I want to enjoy life with you. I want to do life with you. And so I think all of us really start off as friends. I think all of us start off as the way the Bible describes it, as face to face. I'm going to use Ken and Barbie here as my little examples this morning. But we start off face to face. In fact, this is how the Bible describes friendship. When Moses was described as God's friend, here's how it is described in Exodus 33:11. The Lord would speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks with his friend. So this idea of face-to-face is something that I think is just a really great picture of what friendship is ideally supposed to look like. In fact, that's why in a marriage ceremony, we have the couples turn to each other to look at each other and say, I see you and you see me. I want to know you fully and I want to be fully known. In fact, when we talked the first week about marriage, we went back all the way to the very beginning. And here's what we said, that the Lord God said this, it is not good for man to be alone. He says, I will make a suitable helper for him. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. And so they kind of came face to face, you know, and Adam's like, hey there, you know, how you doing kind of thing. Can you imagine the confidence Adam would have had? I mean, being the only guy and God arranging this whole thing. I mean, I'm sure he was beaming with confidence, but this is the picture that God's plan, that God's answer for man's loneliness was marriage, that the first friendship in history was between a husband and a wife. And so we see this idea of face-to-face, but we know that as we go along in our marriages, when we get married, it's fun, but then suddenly now, all of a sudden, when we turn, we walk down the aisle, suddenly now life begins to become more shoulder-to-shoulder. We get this idea of that, you know, there's all these responsibilities that we have, you know, and we have to have jobs and we have kids and we got to get them to school, we got to get them, you know, to sports, and we have yard work, we have kitchen stuff to do. I mean, we all have all these responsibilities, and so we end up spending a lot less time face to face, and we end up doing life shoulder to shoulder, and we end up becoming partners together and co-workers together. And there's a level where this is just necessary and needed, and it's good, and it's good to work together. But we end up spending a lot more time, not like this, but like this. And to be honest, guys, and I'm going to pick on guys because I am one, guys kind of enjoy this more than this. You know, guys, you know, when guys get together, their friendships look a lot more like shoulder to shoulder. Let's do something when we get together. We're not going to sit around and just talk with each other. Guys don't normally do that as much as let's watch the game together or let's go bowling together or do something together, but we're shoulder to shoulder, we're working together. That's what, you know, for guys, that's what friendships often look like. And so they kind of bring that idea into the marriage. And I think this is why, in many ways, we end up going shoulder to shoulder with our spouses more than face to face. But there's a problem that happens over time, that the more you do shoulder to shoulder life and the less face to face time that you have is when suddenly when you hit a bump in the road, and all of us will hit bumps in the road, suddenly there's a disagreement, suddenly there's an argument, suddenly there's hurt feelings. And instead of having the friendship to absorb the pain, to absorb the hurt, to absorb the conflict, We end up doing a lot of this in our marriages. We end up going back to back. We end up really in the position of adversaries more than friends. And the less time we spend face to face, the more time we end up when those problems arise, we end up back to back in our marriages. And it doesn't have to be this way, but we end up back to back for not just a day or two, but sometimes weeks and months and even years. We can just approach each other more as adversary than friends. And so that's one of the problems that can happen when we're not, you know, friends face-to-face. But the other issue, and this is what I hear often, and I haven't experienced this yet, but I can imagine how easy this can happen, is that for years, if you're partnering with somebody, if you're just co-laboring with somebody and doing the kids thing and work thing and, you know, church thing and everything else, eventually things begin to slow down. The kids move out, retirement happens, you know, you become empty nesters, and suddenly you have a lot more time to churn and look at each other. Then you realize you don't even really know the other person very well. You look down and you're like, that is not the person I married. What happened? Things have changed and you don't really know them. It's like, well, now where do we go? What do we do now? We have all this time together, but it's the friendship really isn't there because we haven't worked on it for so many years. And so we recognize that can happen, but the good news is that there's hope, and we're going to talk about this today, but what do you do? Because you kind of really have to start at the very beginning all over again. After the kids leave, after, you know, retirement, whatever, you have to kind of start over on the friendship. And so that's what we're going to talk today about, kind of start there as far as what makes a good friendship so good. So I'm going to put my Ken and Barbie stuff down here, and let's talk about this. What makes a good friendship so good? Now, C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Four Loves, and in it, he talks a lot about friendship. And here's how he describes how friendships begin. So that's where we're going to start this morning. Here's what he says. He says, friendship arises when two or more of the companions discover that they have in common some insight or interest or even taste which the others do not share and which, till that moment, each believed to be his own unique treasure or burden, he says. The typical expression of opening friendship would be something like this. What? You two? I thought I was the only one. It is when two such persons discover one another, it is then that friendship is born. In other words, he says, friendship is really born out of a commonality, out of a shared affinity. And this is what makes friendship so unique and so different from really all of our really other kind of relationships that we have, especially in our family relationships. You can't choose your parents. You can't choose your siblings. Sorry, younger brothers and sisters. You can't choose your older, you know, siblings if they're picking on you. That's just what you have. You can't choose. Oftentimes, you can't even choose your coworkers or who your boss is. That's just the nature of the beast. But when it comes to a friendship, when it comes to marriages, he says that's really a choice that two people make or a group of people make. There's a common interest, and we're choosing to become friends. We're choosing to live together, or work together, serve together, you know, enjoy each other kind of thing. We're choosing this as friends. But as C.S. Lewis would later go on, he says, as Christian marriages are different in the sense that we view things differently when it comes to relationships, when it comes to friendships, and even marriages. Here's what he would say. He says, in friendship, we think we have chosen our peers. He says, but for a Christian, there are, strictly speaking, no chances. He's saying God is sovereign over all this. He says, a secret master of ceremonies has been at work. Christ, who said to the disciples, you have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, can truly say to every group of Christian friends, you have not chosen one another, but I have chosen you for one another. That's interesting to me. He says, you know, the friendship is not a reward for our discriminating and good taste in finding one another out. It is the instrument by which God reveals to us, each of us, the beauty of others. In other words, he's saying, listen, if you really believe that there's a God and that God is sovereignly working things out, he says, this idea of us choosing them is on one hand, but that God is really putting us together. And this idea is that God is putting us together for the other person. That we see, he says, the beauty of the other person. We see what God is making them, that God really intends for them, and we get excited about that, and we say we want to be a part of that, helping that out. Tim Keller said it this way in his book, Meaning of Marriage. He says, here's what it means to fall in love. It is to look at another person and get a glimpse of the other person God is creating, and to say, I see who God is making you, and it excites me, and I want to be a part of this. I want to partner with you and God in the journey you are taking to his throne. And when we get there, I will look at your magnificence and say, I always knew you could be like this. And I think this is really the essence of what a Christian marriage and a Christian friendship is all about. Friends look at the other person and say, I don't want to just love you where you are at. I want to help you become the person that God has made you to be, that God intended you to be. And so in a marriage friendship is this idea of coming alongside each other for the sake of the other person, helping them become this magnificent creature that God always intended for the other person to be. And you get to be a part of that and say, I'm excited to be a part of that. That's what true friendship really is all about, that God is putting us together for that reason. So we're going to talk about friendship this morning, and we're going to really kind of dive into the book of Proverbs. If you've never read the Bible, Proverbs is written by King Solomon. Solomon was the wisest man who's ever lived. And so we're going to look a lot from that, but we're also going to be pulling from some things that Tim Keller has said. We just did a quote from Tim Keller, but he's said a lot of great things and written a lot of things about marriage and friendship, so I'm pulling from that as well. But we're going to be looking at what are kind of the building blocks, the characteristic, the markers of what makes a good friendship so good, especially in a marriage. So this is not just, again, as we said, not just for married couples. If you're not married, you can apply this to any kind of friendship that you have, but we're going to put this in the context of marriage this morning. So when it comes to friends, we're going to look at four different building blocks, markers of what friendship looks like and what Proverbs really says about friendship. But here's the first one. Friends are constant. Friends are constant. Solomon says this in Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Now, when I used to read this in junior high and high school, I had an older brother, and we did not get along very well. And so when I read this verse, I used to think, well, that makes a lot of sense now. That's why he's so mean to me. That's why he's always picking on me. That's why he's always making my life terrible, is because a brother is born for adversity. That God has just placed this older brother in my life just to, you know, mess with me. Okay, now I get it now. But that's not what this verse is meaning. What he's saying here is a brother is born for times of adversity. In other words, and this is what the culture was like in this time period, and even still today in some ways, that the only safety net that you really have in life is your families. And that was so true back in the day, that the only help that you could ever really get, you could count on, was from your family members. And so family was considered top priority, top shelf. And he's saying, listen, a brother or a family member is a person that is, you know, you call when you're in trouble. When you need something, when you need help, when times get tough, when you find yourself in a pickle, that's what family members are for. They're there to rescue you out of help. That's what family members do. But he's saying a friend is different. A friend is unique in this way. A friend is there all the time. A friend isn't there just when you need, you know, help rescuing out of debt or whatever. A friend is there all the time. A friend loves at all times. A friend is constant in good times and in bad times. It is a constant source of strength, of encouragement, of care, of concern. A friend is someone who chooses to come alongside you all the time, at all times. And this is just so different. And men, remember, this is a culture where family is like up here and everything else, you know, friendship is down here. And Solomon was saying, no, a friend, this is a way a friend is even better than a family member. A friend is someone who you can count on constantly, loves at all times. I have lots of cousins. I'm not very close to really any of them. If they call me, I will help them, you know, but But a friend, I mean, a friend is someone who's there always. It's just different. It's in some ways better. And so a friend is constant. Here's another one. Friends are not just constant. Friends are careful. And I intentionally wrote it this way, careful for a reason. Here's what Solomon says in Proverbs 27:14. If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Now, what is he talking about here? He's kind of creating this little scenario here. If a man wakes up and he calls out to his neighbor, trying to be helpful and try to get a blessing, this guy apparently is so disconnected to his neighbor, he doesn't know his neighbor well enough to know that his neighbor isn't going to take it as a blessing. His neighbor is going to take it as a curse. And so here's a guy who really isn't connected very well to his neighbor, doesn't know him very well, and it comes off the wrong way. And whenever I read this verse, this proverb, I always think of my first year of marriage with Beth, because Beth is a night person, not a morning person. So she's amazing at night. She can get so much done at night, and she, with the kids and everything else, it's awesome. But in the morning, she wakes up, can I say angry at times, just because? You know, some of you are like this way. You just wake up angry. There's no reason that you're angry. It's just morning and you're angry kind of thing. And so I didn't know this at the start of our marriage. You know, we didn't live together or anything before we got married. And so, you know, the first weeks and months, I would like roll over and, you know, wake up and, you know, think, hey, I could just, you know, wake her up with a kiss or, you know, kind of do one of those things with the hair, just trying to be sweet and romantic. Hey, it's time to get up kind of thing. And now I worked on Sleeping Beauty, so I thought surely it would work on my wife. Who wouldn't want to, you know, wake up with a kiss? And so I realized pretty quickly on that she didn't take it as a blessing. She took it as a curse in a sense, and she just did not really enjoy that at all. And so I was learning my wife. I was not connected emotionally enough to my wife. I didn't know my wife well enough to know that a blessing was really going to turn into a curse. Here's another way that Solomon says this. He says, like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on soda, is one who sings songs, and this is really sing songs of joy to a heavy heart. He says, listen, you can't be a friend to someone who's sitting there heavy-hearted, and you can't go around just singing songs, you know, about this. And he creates this picture of, again, a person who's singing his songs to a person who has got a heavy heart. You just can't do that because this person's really not emotionally connected. They don't really know that person. They don't know how they're taking it. And it's really this idea of if you knew the person well enough, if you were emotionally connected well enough, then you know you couldn't do that, and you wouldn't want to do that because you're emotionally connected to them. That if they're hurting, you're going to be hurting. You're not going to be singing songs of joy. You're going to be right there with them. And I think this is really greatly pictured in parenting. As parents, we are automatically connected emotionally to our kids, right? I mean, this is not even a choice thing. It's just like there are kids, we feel what they kind of feel. I remember Tim Keller saying one time that he got this advice a long time ago. I think this was from a mom. But she said, you are only as happy, you'll only ever be as happy as your unhappiest child. As a parent, this is just the reality that you're going to face. You're only going to be as happy as your unhappiest child. Why? Because you are emotionally connected to them. You feel what they feel. You kind of go through what they go through. Whether you like it or not, it's just kind of an automatic feeling that you have. And so the reality is you're only ever going to be as happy as your unhappiest child as a result of that. But here's what makes a friendship so amazing. You choose to take that risk. You choose to put yourself in that position to be emotionally connected to your friend or to your spouse. You choose to have that kind of relationship. And so you know how they feel. You know how, you know, what they're going through. You know all that, and you're right there with them. And so you are, because of that, because of your connection, you are emotionally invested into them. You are invested in their emotional flourishing. If they flourish, you flourish. If they're not flourishing, you can't flourish either. And so you are really invested into this. And so that's the risky part with comes with friendship. But that's the beauty of it, too, that you're right there with them. And so as a result of when they feel something, you feel something, you are extraordinarily careful of how you treat them. of what you say to them, how you approach them, because how they feel, you will end up feeling. And so you're very, very careful. You're very, very thoughtful in how you approach the friendship because you are so emotionally connected to the other person. And so friends are careful in that way. But on the opposite end, the flip side of this, friends are also candid. They just need to be candid. Here's what Solomon says in Proverbs 27, 5 and 6. He says this, "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." And so Solomon uses some paradoxical language here to really describe what oftentimes happens is that as a spouse or as a friend, we have information, we have some truth, we have some facts that we need to share with our spouse or with our friend. But if we do that, we know that's going to hurt them. No matter how well we couch it, no matter how gentle we come, no matter how well we prepare ourselves to bring this information to them, we know it's going to hurt them. We know it's going to wound them. That's just the reality of the thing. But we know we need to do that. Just like a surgeon knows they need to do a cut before they can bring healing. We know that just that's the part of the thing. But I find in so many counseling situations and couples that there are times when either one or both parties really kind of refuse to do this. They're afraid to do this. They're afraid to really tell the other person the truth. They're afraid to be candid because that's going to upset them. That's going to make them angry. You don't know how they're going to react. That's going to upset the apple cart even more. I really can't share this information with them. And so to be loving, I'm going to hide this from them. This is what he means by hidden love. I'm just going to hide this from them. I'm really not going to share how I'm feeling with them or what's going on. I really can't because if they find out, they're just going to get upset. But notice what he does here. He compares this idea in hidden love in verse 5 with this idea of the work of an enemy in verse 6. So hidden love is this idea that if I share this idea with them, I share this information with them, I share how I'm feeling with them, they're going to respond in a negative way. And so I'm just going to hide this from them. He says it's much like a work of an enemy, actually. What you're doing is just as bad as what Judas did with Jesus as he kissed him, as he betrayed him. It's like that kind of thing. And it's like, well, how is that? Well, because your friend is counting on you. Your friend needs you to give them that information. They're relying on that. They're expecting that. They need that information. And if you're not giving it to them, you're not really loving them. You're really loving yourself more than them. You're really caring about how you're going to have to deal with all this than really them. You're afraid to hurt them, but it's not in a good way. You're just afraid to hurt them because it's going to have to affect you and how it's going to affect the relationship. He says it's really kind of a trap almost. Look at what he says in Proverbs 29:5. He says, "Whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his feet." See, your friends, your spouse, again, is counting on you to help them see themselves of who they are. We count on our friends so much to help us understand who we are and how we see things. And he says, if you refuse to share and be candid with the other person, then it's like almost putting their foot in a bear trap. You are setting them up for disaster. They are needing you to tell them, here's how you are coming off. Here's how you look. Here's how this is wrong thinking. And if you're not sharing that with them, you're really setting them up for disaster. And so friends really need to be candid with one another. It's just necessary. It's needed in the relationship. And so this is what I really appreciate about Beth. Beth is very candid with me at times. She can tell me when I'm being a jerk. She can tell me when I'm screwing up. She can tell me when I'm being selfish or being prideful, and I'm that way a lot. And so my wife is happy to share that with me. But here's the beauty of my wife, and here's the balance that we need to have. We need to be both careful and candid in this approach. Right, you need to be both, and she's so good at this. Where I am just more candid, I will share, you know, what I'm, you know, seeing and just kind of out there for her. But she understands. She is so emotionally connected to me that she understands. I need to hear these things. These things are going to hurt, but it's not just going to hurt me. It's going to hurt her because she's so emotionally connected to me. And so you need to have that balance if you really are both careful and candid with one another. And so that's the beauty of friendship. You can have both, and you can do both. And here's the last of them. Friends are not just candid, they're not just careful, but they're counselors. They're counselors. Now, what do I mean by that? Here's something that Solomon said in Proverbs 27:9. He says, "Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel." Now, this word earnest means it comes from the heart. Counsel means that you confide in someone, you share your secrets with someone. And so what this means is that a friend is emotionally vulnerable with the other person. They're opening up. They're allowing you to see all the way down to the depths of who you are. That's what a good friend does. And this is the difference between a good friend's counsel or a spouse's counsel or a counsel from a counselor. See, when you go to a paid professional counselor, what do? You sit there and you kind of just unload. You dump everything that you have onto them. And what do? They respond with some advice. Now, if they're a really good counselor, they may open up a little bit and share a story or two about their own situation, their own life, their own issue that you may have a connection with. But they don't ever just dump right back on you, do they? They don't open up and say, "Well, here's what I'm struggling with, my marriage and my kids and whatever." I mean, you wouldn't expect that. You wouldn't want that from a paid professional. That wouldn't be professional. And on the flip side, you don't ever want to just sit there and, you know, and listen to someone and never be able to give advice to them at all. And this is what the beauty of a friendship counsel looks like. This is what the beauty of a spousal counselor relationship looks like. It's a two-way street. It really is a two-way street that I can share all of my burdens, all of my pain, all of my heartache. I can open myself up fully to you. I can be face-to-face and say, "Here's who I am," and I get that back from you. There's a reciprocation there that you do the same thing. And when that happens, that's sweetness, he's saying. That's so sweet. That is so pleasant when I can be fully open to you, to show you who I am, and you can accept me for who I am, and I can see all the way down in your heart, all the way down in your soul, and I know what you're thinking, I know what you're feeling, and that's just, there's a beauty there, there's a sweetness there. It's so pleasant that you can have this earnest counsel, this openness, the emotional vulnerability within a relationship like a marriage. But it's not just pleasant. There's another side of the coin when it comes to the counsel part. And this is maybe one of the passages of Proverbs that you've heard before, and maybe, you know, you didn't know where it came from, but here's where it comes from. Proverbs 27:17, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." But there's the other side to this pleasantness, that there's a challenge side to it. There's a rub to it. You know, there's a conflict more to it, where you're challenging them, you're kind of rubbing them. And he says, you need both. You need the sweetness. You need the pleasantness. But there's also times when you just have to confront and you just have to challenge. And you might say, "Yeah, it's going to be okay. You know, we're going to be great together. We're going to be cool. But here's where you're messing up. Here's where you're not seeing things. And so I need to challenge you on this." And so there's both a confrontational side and a pleasant side to a counsel in a relationship, like a friendship or a marriage. So here's the four again. So friends are candid, or they're constant, they're careful, they're candid, and they're counselors. Constant, careful, candid counselors. If you can't remember that, here's a different way of remembering it. A good friend always lets you in and never lets you down. A good friend always lets you in. They're candid with you. They're emotionally vulnerable with you. And yet they will never let you down. They are constant. They are a constant source of strength, of comfort, of care, and they're careful with you. They're never going to let you down. They may wound you, but they'll never wound you to the point where they're going to destroy you. That's not their goal in wounding you. The wound is only there to actually bring healing and help. And so they are there. They're constant. They'll always let you in, and yet they'll never let you down. That is what a good friend does. Now, when you think about this for a while, as I have, maybe one of two things happens in your mind. When we start talking about friendship, when we talk about, especially with our spouses, but when we talk about friendship, maybe for you, some of you are really lonely out there, and maybe you're feeling this longing of, "I wish I had a friend like that. I just wish I had like one friend like that. I wish, you know, and especially in a marriage, I wish my spouse was like that. I wish we just had that kind of relationship. And we just have to recognize we live in a culture where it is so hard to make and to maintain really good friendships. We live in a culture and a time, especially in this part of the world, where it just seems like everybody is so transient. And it's just like they are here for a year or 2 years, but then they're out of our lives again. And it is all what we're talking about. This takes time. This takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of intentionality. And oftentimes we don't have the time that our hearts need to make the friends that we do need. I mean, we just don't have the time. And so often it's like, hey, we're getting to know somebody, and then they're out of our lives. And it's tough, and there's longing there for this deep friendship. And I'm not saying this to discourage people from trying. We should still try to build these deep friendships. What I'm saying is, this is what, again, makes marriage relationships and marriage friendships so special and so unique and so wonderful, is that a friendship and a marriage, that is supposed to last forever. You guys are supposed to do life together forever, you know? And so even though we may not have the friends outside of our marriage relationship that we long for, what we do have is this potential for a lifelong best friend kind of relationship that God desires for us. This companion that's supposed to walk with us no matter where we move, no matter who moves, we have them. And so maybe there's a sense of longing that is stirred in your heart, but maybe there's something else going on as well. If you really kind of think about this even a little bit more, maybe for some of you, when we start talking about what a good friend is, that, you know, a friend that always is there, will never let you down, who is candid, who is careful, who is constant, maybe something in your heart is going, you know what? Maybe I haven't always been the friend to my spouse that my spouse needs. Maybe I haven't lived up to the kind of a good friend that a good friend is, you know? And this is the whole thing that I try to teach my son, Sam. In order to have good friends, you need to what? You need to be a good friend. And so maybe for some of you, you're going, you know what? If I'm honest with myself, and this is what I had to do with myself, it's like, I haven't always been the kind of friend that my wife needs. I have not always been emotionally connected to my wife, and I'm still learning how to do that. I've not always been careful with my wife. I'm not always there for my wife as she needs me to be. And it's hard. And I'm realizing I want that kind of friendship. I love, you know, these couples that we see on the screen and the other things. You know, we love the idea of being best friends to the very end, you know, friends to the end. And it's just, how do you have that? Well, you need to be a good friend in order to have a good friendship with your spouse. And so how do you have that? How do you get that? How do you have the power? How do you have the motivation in order to be the kind of friend that you need to have in order to have the kind of friendship that you need to have? And the answer is Jesus. The answer is Jesus. See, the night of his arrest, the night before, you know, he gets arrested and crucified and all that, the night of all that, he is gathering his closest friends together. John chapters 14 through 17 really talk about this night together that Jesus had with his closest friends. And in those chapters, he's just trying to describe to them what is about to happen and how to make sense of it all and what does this all mean. He's trying to give them kind of some ideas to just kind of hold on to, because it's going to get tough for them just in a little bit. And so in John chapter 15, Jesus here says it this way. He begins to describe everything in this idea of friendship. He begins to package this in terms of friendship. Here's what he says in John 15. He says, "Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." And then in verse 15, he would say, "I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I've learned from my Father, I have made known to you." Do you see the openness, the vulnerability, the candidness? He says, I have opened myself up to you. I've shown you everything that I can. And so here's what he's doing. He's basically packaging all of history in terms of friendship. Because if you understand God, if you understand the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that's friendship. From eternity past, there is this always love, always support, always encouragement within the Trinity. And because love wants to create room for others to join, God created mankind. He created us to enjoy that kind of friendship with him. He created us as image bearers so that we need companionship. We need friendship with him and with each other. But we know in the story that quickly on, we turn our back against God. And what happens when normally when one friend turns their back on another person, what happens? Usually the other person will turn their back on them as well and say, fine, if you turn your back on me, I'll turn my back on you. But what does Jesus do? Jesus becomes the ultimate friend. He becomes the ultimate friend in this way that he says, listen, a friend will give you wounds even though you need them, but I am the ultimate friend. I will take all the wounds on myself on the cross. I will always be there. I will be a constant source for you of care, support. I will never leave you or forsake you. I will be there for you. I will be constant. I will love you at all times. I will be the ultimate friend for you. And in a way that he gave up his friendship with the Father for a time so that we could be friends with God. I mean, think about the night that Jesus had, the last night in the garden. Again, he brings his closest of his closest guys with him to pray with him as he's praying to the Father, pleading with him, you know, dealing with all this stress and all this pressure that he's about to face. And what do? They fall asleep on him. And then Judas betrays him. Peter denies him three times. And yet he remains true to them to the very end. He is the ultimate friend for us. And when you understand Jesus is the ultimate friend for you, when you understand how much you have been loved and accepted, then you can go out in strength. You can go out in confidence and courage and say, I'm going to be a good friend to others, even if they reject me, even if they hurt me, even if they wound me. I've already been loved and accepted by my Heavenly Father through Christ. And that is all that I need to be the best friend that I can be to my spouse and others. He is the ultimate friend. And for those of you who are struggling, as we kind of wrap things up, as those of you who are struggling with maybe feeling more and more, you know, separated, you know, and now you're kind of looking at each other and going, I don't know you, you know, what is that commonality that you have? And here's the great news about being a Christ follower, that your commonality, no matter how much your spouse changes, how much you change, will always be Christ at the center. If you are a Christ follower and you are dedicated to a Christ-centered marriage, Christ will always be there to draw you back. Christ will always be there, even though times will get tough, times will be difficult. You may not even know the other person very well at this point, but it's like God will always be right there drawing you back towards each other. That's the hope that we have. Even if you're empty nesters right now and you're looking, going, I don't even know where to start, that's where you start. I love what Tim Keller wrote. He says this. He says, what then is marriage for? It is for helping each other to become our future glory selves, the new creations that God will eventually make us. The common horizon husband and wife look towards is the throne and the holy, spotless, and blameless nature we will have. I can think of no more powerful common horizon than that. And that is why putting a Christian friendship at the heart of a marriage relationship can lift it to a level that no other vision for marriage approaches. That no matter what you are doing, dealing with right now, no matter how much you are struggling, if Christ is at the middle, if the horizon is that, then you guys can move together in that direction. It may take a lot of time, a lot of heartache, a lot of candid conversations, a lot of wounds that maybe are just needed to get healing, but that's what you're working towards. That's the hope. That's the ideal. That's what we want for you. So, I didn't know where to put this last part, so I thought, I'll just save this for the very end of our very end of our series. And so this is the very end of our series, but I wanted to share something else that Solomon wrote to us. And this is in the Bible, so I can read this. So here's what he says. This is cool. He says this. He says, go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart. Some of you want me to stop right there, but we'll keep going. For it is now that God favors what you do. And here's the thing. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love. all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. And when he talks about meaningless life, what he's really meaning is fleeting life. That's the word for fleeting. It's short-lived. And here's what he's saying. He's saying, listen, guys, you guys got married. Now go enjoy it together. Go out and, you know, get dressed up and go out and just have fun together. Enjoy each other. Life is so short. Stop just doing this all of your life and this on. Stop and look at each other. Enjoy each other. Enjoy your wife. Enjoy your husband. That's why God puts you together, to enjoy each other. And do what it takes. If that means you need to renew your vows and renew your commitments, do that. If that means setting aside those expectations we talked about, do that. If that means coming under the other person, loving and submitting them the way that Christ loved and submitted himself to us, do that. If that means better communication, listening, speaking, how you respond, do that. But do what it takes to enjoy your spouse. Have fun together. Be good friends with each other. Do what it takes. It's worth it. This is our best friends here. Potentially, this is our best friends. Just do what it takes. Enjoy the marriage. That's what it means. That's what it means to have love in marriage. And that's how you can stay together and enjoy it. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much for just the series that, God, I've been challenged, hopefully others have been challenged, to look at our spouses, to look at you differently as well through all of this. God, I pray, Lord, for those who are struggling right now, who are struggling to find that common ground, that common footing. I pray, Lord, that at the end of the day, they would recognize it has to be Christ. It has to be you. And for those who don't or haven't yet placed their faith in you, God, I pray that maybe today they would recognize this is what is needed. Not just to save my marriage, but to save me, to save my life, to save a relationship with you. God, thank you so much that you've placed Christ in our so many of our lives here and so many couples that we can look to and see so many great examples of what it means to be friends in a marriage. God, I pray, Lord, that you give us strength and courage and confidence to do what is needed to maintain those friendships. So when the kids leave or when we retire, when we finally have more and more time to look at each other, we're not looking at a stranger, but we're looking at our best friend who we longed for these years to come so that we can spend even more time face-to-face together. God, thank you for Jesus who makes all this possible. We pray all this in his precious name. Amen.